From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love. And we do that by building the Backyard Advantage, the most connected community in the world for local entrepreneurs. And today, super fired up because we're coming up on our 10-year anniversary of the show. And so we interview people that have had a lot of success, and occasionally it's people that are more in the startup phase and maybe even a medium-sized company. And so today on the show, I've got Chris Ewing, and he was on the show the first year we started the show. So it had been year one. So this is almost like a good anniversary show, if you will. And he was a guy that had already had some success in building out Sherry's Berries and this incredible food business, taking it national, global. I can't remember, but I know it got big under your leadership. And then I think the last time I talked to you, you were also doing One Ink, and you know, you're just sharing with me that story, and it's blowing me away. You're no longer is somebody who's maybe at the beginning stages of entrepreneurship. You weren't even then. You had already had a lot of success at that stage, but now, wow, One Ink. You told me that it just sold for like $2 billion.
Yeah, we just did a transaction in first quarter of last year, and it was around $2 billion.
Yeah. So, yeah. What's it feel like? Okay. So
it feels good.
So, yeah, the day it happened, so obviously, you know, building a company is stressful. I'm going to start at the end of that company, just for a second. Then we'll walk back through the journey. But, like, I'm just imagining, right, so there's this, you know, building the company's got a lot of stress and ups and downs and this and that and exciting times. And then, you know, you started getting into these agreements where you may or may not sell the company and you're hoping to sell it and it's going to sell and all that. And then when it actually, you don't really count the chickens. You don't count the chickens till the eggs. When the money hits the bank account, what's that feel like?
It's very surreal. And first of all, it's great to be back. It's good to see you, Mark. It's been a wild 9-10 years. So let's start at the end. Yeah, it was very surreal because you have so much struggle and so much problems getting there. And, you know, you believe that the company is going to be, you know, doing X, Y, and Z. And then when it does it, it's really the best descriptive I could say is I was just really proud that we were able to succeed and quite a great return for all of our investors and for our employees. And just a pretty surreal moment, especially when the funny thing is, you know, when you're talking billions of dollars in valuation, you don't realize what that number means until after the deal was kind of done. I said, well, what other companies are worth billions of dollars? And there's not a lot. And there's big ones, like, you know, you're like, wow, we built something in Sacramento, 100% built here. You know, we've been in Folsom. We started out in Rancho Cordova and then in Folsom. And it's just wild. It's great.
That's awesome. So I've sold a few companies in my time. And I remember one exit specifically. It was me and my brother were sitting around the phone, and it was a private equity deal with a merger and another company, and there's a bunch of attorneys, and we're all on the line. And so there's this final sign-off thing, like, did Haney's approve? Do these guys approve? Check. They start going through, you know, like a bunch of yeses, getting a bunch of yeses from all the concerned parties. And then it was almost like, I now pronounce you man and wife, and you know, next thing you know, the money hits your account. And it really was, I'm sitting around the, like a speakerphone at the time with my brother Paul, and it's like it's almost like tears come to your eyes because of how hard you've tried to get it there. Yeah. Okay, and I'm talking about a way, way, way less sizable sale, but was there a moment like that where it's like you're there and it's...
Yeah, it's interesting because I don't know if you remember, I'm a corporate securities lawyer by trade.
Oh, yeah,
trading before I started getting into business. And so I've done a lot of closings where I've been on the other side.
Okay,
right? And I'm getting everything done and we're checking everything off. And I've never had a deal. It's interesting. I've never had a deal that I've been involved with in my career that has not gone through.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Not a single one.
Why?
As a lawyer or not a lawyer. So here's the crazy part about this deal. We were supposed to sign documents on Friday, and an issue popped up, which was not a small issue. Wasn't really substantive about the business, but an issue popped up. And so we did not know whether it was going to close or not. And, you know, you negotiate these deals and they take a long time and you've been working for a very long time. And so it was probably the most stressful weekend of my entire life because we're right to the final.
You're on the altar.
We're on the altar. And it's all of a sudden, you know, yeah, it's take that analogy. And all of a sudden the bride's like going, okay, I may or may not be there on Monday. And we're going, okay, well. And so when it signed, it was extra, oh my God, I can't believe that we got the deal done. And yeah. Obviously wasn't a very big issue, but it was an issue enough that you're just never quite sure. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that happens with deals is they have a certain amount of momentum. And if they ever stop, it's very bad, right? You want to keep the momentum going. And so, we all signed and we waited. And then I opened up my bank account and went, okay, let's go.
Right, so you make transfer the funds. So all the money goes every which way or whatever. I don't know my situation anyway.
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's awesome. Well, I'm very proud of you. I'm proud to know you. I think Sacramento, I know there was an article in the Business Journal. And so I think there's people that know of this happening, of course, but more like not a very big percentage of your business. You weren't like a household name in Sacramento other than in the startup community, business community, I suppose. But maybe I'm underselling.
No, you're right.
The world I run in.
We're a business to business software provider. And so, you know, we're not a household name by any means. And, you know, super proud to have done this in Sacramento. Actually, it's funny. You asked me a question back then, you know, how hard is it to get talent in Sacramento? And it's hard, but you know, there are great people here. And you know, we really were able to build the team and make it through all the tough times. And here we are. Yeah.
All right. Well, maybe just if you don't mind, why don't we walk through that journey a little bit? You mentioned tough times. Maybe describe one of the tough times and then one of the exciting times besides the end.
Yeah. So in between, so I did Sherry's Berries and I started a behavioral marketing company and then sold it. And then I started two insurance entities and then an insurance company and sold them. So One Inc. was an outgrowth of that. And all of those assets got sold in 2010, 11, and 12. So One Inc. was a standalone company on its own, really in 2011. And so we had not sold a dollar outside. So it really started in 2011. So day one, you know, we're like, well, we no longer have any revenue. We got to go raise money. And it was pretty wild because we saw the opportunity. The hardest part as an entrepreneur is you see what is just absolutely the easiest opportunity in the history of the world, right? And you're like, all we got to do is this and it's just going to happen. It'll be great. But convincing other people to understand that vision and believe in your ability to execute is a lot harder. And so it was kind of funny because, you know, I'd raised a bunch of money before, but you just never know whether you're going to get investors or not. So I went down to meet with our lawyer. And now this is pretty surreal. And this is when I knew we were on the right track. Went down to meet with our lawyer in Palo Alto and said, hey, we need to raise money. Do you know any, you know, here's our business plan. Let's get going. And at the end of the meeting, he goes, how much money do you guys need? And I was like, well, we need X. And he goes, okay, well, here's 500,000 to get going. And which is very unheard of, right? It's very hard to raise money like that. And so the fact that he believed in us and, you know, we're in the right space, but you know, it certainly wasn't easy after that. So let's go back to what One Inc. does. We do insurance company payment software. So insurance is very interesting and large enterprises are very interesting that process payments, but insurance specifically, carriers do not want PAN data or credit card data on their network. And the reason why is we all remember Target, right? When Target got broken into and everybody's information got out. Well, if you're an insurance company and somebody breaks in and gets credit card data from your network, it's a disaster. So all insurance companies after that basically said, we're just going to outsource this to a third party. It's not worth us doing it. So we started working on doing exactly that. So they outsourced to us the full payment stack. So we have a bunch of software so that for PCI, which is, you know, the certification you need to get for when you're running credit cards, that we do the PCI certification. They don't have to. The credit cards come to us. We tokenize them, send them back a token. So there's no way that they can get broken into and have a problem. Okay. That's our main start to our business. And so then we added a bunch of software around it. And so we're in the insurance space. And, you know, we have a very big vertical. It sounds like a pretty easy thing to take a payments, but when you have to do everything rather than the carrier, you know, every window that pops up, if you get a text, if you call on the IVR, all of those are our software. So, and we now serve, you know, 10 of the top 20 insurance carriers in the Wow. US. And so most people probably listening are using wanting to make payments, even though they don't know it.
Wow.
So, the good news is that the insurance vertical is, you know, probably the largest vertical that exists in the world, period. It's just a massive amount of money flows through, you know, we process now well over 100 billion in payments, and it's still just a very small portion of the total.
And the payments, those are like the premium payments that we make when we're paying our
So we do inbound payments. Yeah. That's one piece, and then we do outbound payments. So outbound would be you have a claim and we got to make a payment to a body shop and or pay you for bodily injury or something like that. So there's inbound and outbound payments, and then there's ancillary payments that insurance companies do. But there's about $2 trillion of payments. And so we're still very small. Oneik is still very small, but it obviously you can become a pretty big business in a huge pond.
Okay, so it sounds so great. You got your 500 grand or whatever the initial... now, you see, the thing is, you had already had success.
Yeah.
So you made the decision. You knew you had the type of business model that was, I guess, venture ready, if you will, because you could have funded it, you know, at the beginning yourself, but you said to yourself, I need venture capital because why?
Well, you always want to, I mean, you can always invest your money, of course. And I did invest money in the company, of course. But you also, as a, you know, your net worth is still small relative to the amount of money a company like that is going to need.
Going to need over time. So, you need something to start, then you have some infusions.
So you need partners, and you also need partners that are going to bring in more than money, but also bring in access to, you know, great... partnerships and the ability to bring in talent and the ability to help get a great board and really manage your business with you, right? And so there's a lot of value that investors can bring that it's not just money. And, you know, in our case, that happened. It really helped. So our first round, which was in 2014, was with H&Q Asia Pacific. They were the H&Q arm, and then they went, they were the first VC in Asia. So they like took Starbucks and people to Asia. Their idea was we were going to bring insurance to Asia and we would be part of that software revolution, which was a great idea. Our next round was with AXA, which is the largest insurance company in the world, Mass Mutual, which is a top 50 financial firm in the world, and American Family, which is a top 20 insurance carrier.
Okay, so this is like corporate venture?
Corporate venture, okay. Yeah. So that gave us access, of course, to their customers. And then it also gave us, which, you know, in the payment space especially, you can't ever have a customer think, are these guys going to make it? Right? You have to have enough money and enough support so that they're just not worried about giving you $100 million of payments because it's still got to flow through your system. So one of the big problems in payments that's particularly hard is you have to get a certain amount of scale before you can win. But how do you get a certain amount of scale to win if you don't have the scale, right? So credibility from the investors that you get is super important in business to business. So, you know, we needed those, you know, third party stamp and seal of approval to kind of allow us to get bigger and bigger. And that worked. Yeah.
Was there a point in time where you had to pivot?
Yes. So what's interesting is we started out, Tim Tyanikoff, who's my co-founder, it's really funny because we just sold our insurance entities. And I had another partner, Jerry Keenan. We just sold those entities. And so Tim and I were at lunch and we said, okay, what are we going to do? You know, we're going to do something with Oneik. Should we do something not insurance related or should we do something insurance related? And we pulled out a bunch of things. And I go, you know what we should do? We should do payments. Payments are great. You do payments and you turn them on and you just make a bunch of money, right? And nothing's ever that easy.
It's like a toll booth.
Yeah, it's like a toll booth. We'll just do that. And then... we thought about it and went, well, we don't know anything about payments. We have to do insurance software. Mm-hmm. So we started doing insurance software and we built two very large ERP systems, one for agencies and managing agencies and others for managing insurance companies, the whole stack, huge, massive insurance software products. And what was interesting is because we made the ERP program, and if you're an insurance company and we're running your business, so we're doing the whole software for the insurance company, we just said, well, let's just turn on our own payments. So we did that. So what ended up happening is we started scaling in payments with our software. So it was embedded payments within our own software. And that allowed us to get a certain amount of scale. And then we were working on two massive deals. And I am very antsy, to say the least. So these two deals that we were working on, one was, it doesn't matter who it was, very large deals that were going to take about 2.5 years to complete the software development that would really get us to the next level on the software side. And I was like sitting there going, okay, well, what am I going to do for 2 years? And so I called a friend who had gone from GMAC Insurance, when it was GMAC Insurance, now it's National General that was bought by Allstate, had just gone to Mutual of Venumclaw. So I called her up and said, hey, can I come and talk to you? Because we have all these products that are kind of ancillary. And I showed her my list of products on my sheet. And she goes, payments? We need payments. I go, you do? So I go, okay,
it happened like that?
Yeah.
I mean, you already had the back of your mind, but...
So I showed her a list. She goes, oh, we need payments. We're looking for a payment vendor right now. And I go, okay, great. And so we ended up closing that deal. And that's really how we got in payments as a standalone.
Okay, so you built it for that company, and now you've got it, and it can be
sold. Now it's a standalone product because we said, okay, what? This was in 2014. So we really got in the payments business in 2014. So Mutual of Venumclaw was our first standalone payments customer. And then what ended up happening is we started having a lot of success on the policy side and the, and our software side. But that's a hard business. It's there's lots of change. Customers are very demanding. And what kept wrinkling around in my head was payments is easy. You just turn it on. So what was interesting is that literally was kind of, once we went live with Mutual of Venumclaw, we're now live with this customer and money's flowing in. And we literally didn't do anything for like a year. And so we were like, wow, that is a phenomenal business. Maybe we should really start doing more payments. So we started working on payments more. And then when we did our next round, after we did the round with when we did our rounds with AXA and Mass Mutual, we started focusing on payments more. So we still had the dual business. And then we did our next round, which was with private equity. And that round, we right after we closed the deal, which was with Great Hill Ventures, which is one of the largest private equity firms in the world, they said, well, what do you guys want to do? And we're like, we need to make a decision whether we're a payments company or a software company. And they really helped us and just said, let's just do payments. Mm. So we really shut down our software side. And the second we did that, our business just absolutely exploded.
Interesting. So I'm looking for lessons in there. One, I say a lot of times to startup people or anybody really, what do you do with a good idea? You start talking about it. Well, you went to lunch with an old friend and pulled out a list of ideas.
Yep.
And she picked one and it turned into something. Almost sounds random, but things just aren't random, right?
No. Yeah. I think so. This is an interesting thing. And I heard this a long time ago. I don't know if it's factually true, but I think it's close enough. Every business except for eBay, they wrote down the business plan and none of them do that business plan. So I think the best entrepreneurs are capable of, you get involved in an industry and then you realize, well, I thought I wanted to do that, but that's actually a much better business. And you're willing to make those pivots, even though you've sunk a ton of, you know, time, energy, emotion into this business. And it's been your, you know, you've been really selling that to your investors and everybody. You just have to go have the ability to say, well, that's not as good of a use of capital, and make that pivot. A lot of times I think what happens, and I think I'm particularly good at this, which is I kind of view every problem as an opportunity. And so I think what entrepreneurs make a mistake is they'll start running into a brick wall and they'll, you know, we hear you got to be persistent, you got to keep going, you got to fight, you got to do all this. But rather than look at the problem as this is a sign that maybe this isn't the right way to go, mm-hmm. and then solving that problem with maybe even a whole different solution, and that's really what catapults you. They keep trying to do the same thing, mm-hmm. and you know, which is, it's very important to be sticky and determined and disciplined and all that stuff, but it can also be a detriment if you do it too long. So I think where I've been particularly good in my career is we run into a brick wall and I see that as, okay, well, how are we going to solve that problem? And oftentimes it might be a whole pivot and we're, okay. you know, that's a problem we just can't get through. So let's try this. And then,
it sounds like what you had though was working at some level. It wasn't like brick wall time.
Well, so here's the brick wall time that we had. Every single company that I have founded, and I think it's like six or seven now, every single one of them has been successful and sold. Every single one of them along the way, you wake up in the morning and go, we're out of business for sure. There is no chance we're making it. And as an entrepreneur, you kind of get used to it. So I remember with One Inc, we were trying to do a financing. This is before the AXA deal. We were down to, you know, we started doing the financing in January. And this is in 2018, the market got really rocky for raising money. And, usually it only took us, you know, a couple of months to get a term sheet. Our business was growing really well, doing well. But in that market, it was very, very, very difficult. We went through, you know, from January when we really kind of started needing to do the financing to September, we had no financing, no term sheet, no okay. opportunity, and we were going to run out of money. We were going to miss payroll the 15th of September. We were going to be out of money. And in the software business, you can never miss payroll. I mean, you can't miss payroll in any business, but these are highly talented people and they can just go get a job. The minute you miss it one day, they're just gone and you know, to come back. So I'm so used to this phenomenon of we're just going to go out of business and that must be a good thing. So I called up our CFO and I said, we are 100% not going to make it. Which means apparently we're going to make it because every business I've ever been in, when I've had that feeling, that's the beginning of something new. I kid you not, the next day, AXA calls up and says, hey, we want to put in a term sheet. And because now we had at least some interest, I was able to get a bridge loan from our current investors to make payroll, you know, in a couple of days. And we ended up making it. So that was one time.
There's
a
lesson. I mean, so many lessons in what you said, like all the companies you've ever started, you've had to pivot. Same with me for sure. Yeah. But also the fact that when you run into that brick wall or that, you know, point where you might go out of business, that really is almost the best opportunity to have a turning point, a good pivot.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause you have to fix it, right? You have to figure out. Sometimes it might be the way that you're just, you know, let's say you're going to the market and you're selling your business, right? If it's not working, the answer might not be that other people aren't hearing it. The answer might be you're communicating it wrong, right? So you might have to change the deck or you might have to, you know, you just have to realize that whatever is happening, if it's not going well, requires some sort of a pivot. It doesn't require, and you can't be, you know, you're dealing with people's lives and you know, a lot of people are counting on you and you can't be willy-nilly with these changes. They have to be strategically and thought out, but you still have to think about them and make the changes. And it's just interesting that I think another thing I think people do wrong when you know what the destination is. Let's say you're driving to LA and you know LA is 350 miles. It's not that hard to make it to LA. But when you don't know where the destination is, mm-hmm. it's very difficult to know how close you are to the end zone. So let's say you're running on a football field and there's a bunch of fog and you finally decide to give up and then the fog goes away and you were like literally next to the end zone. I think what happens with a lot of businesses and people is they literally are next to the end zone, but they don't know it. And so they give up that last little bit, you know, and miraculous things can happen in that last little bit because, you know, you finally, you know, you got there. So I think a lot of people tend to quit a little bit too early. And so I've been very lucky, you know, that none of my businesses have failed, but every one of them, you could ask any business and I can tell you the night or the day I woke up and what was the problem. And One Inc, we probably had five different times we were out of business. Like there was no way we were going to make it. And so I think a lot of people see, well, we started a company, got into payments, sold the company for billions of dollars. Not that hard, a straight shot. Well, at least five times along the way, we were out of business. And crazy, weird things that you can, you know, can pop up that you just don't even realize that can pop up that can really affect your business in a negative way. And you just got to solve them. The answer is you just got to solve it.
Okay, there's a lot of lessons to be learned. So what was, do you have like a proudest moment that looking back at the building of One Inc. where you're just like, I was so proud of that?
Well, it's really funny because we started, so we sold our insurance entities and then One Inc. had a little teeny office. And my office, because everybody had offices, was literally a closet with stuff in it. And so my kids, they were small at the time, they would come and it was a storage room office, right? But it was literally a storage room. So there was old desks and all kinds of stuff in my office and I just moved half of it out of the way. So they would come and climb around in the old office furniture and stuff and build forts and stuff in there. It was really kind of funny. But to start from there and have a company be, you know, the proudest moment, of course, is, you know, closing the deal and you know, not necessarily, I mean, money's okay. I'm not very money driven. Now, when you have, you know, you've had success, you can, you know, it's people say, well, it's easy for you to say, but I'm just not that money motivated. I really love building businesses and I love the art of building things. And so it's, you know, a lot of people would say, well, why are you doing this Naughty's thing now? And it's just what I do. And we'll get into that later.
Yeah. Well, I'll talk about that in a minute. But so the investors and the owners had success, but you create a lot of opportunity for other people. You don't build a company like that without other people seeing all kinds of opportunity. I have to imagine there are like key people that raise their game during the process.
Well, this is interesting. So I think another talent that I've gotten pretty good at over the years is figuring out where a good spot on the bus is for talented people that isn't necessarily the spot that they think. So I'm sure you've read the book Good to Great. Mm-hmm. So, and, you know, first of all, should they be on the bus, right? So I was working with this lawyer that we hired at the insurance entity. And honestly, he was just not a very good lawyer. But he had a great attitude. He should be on the bus. I couldn't figure out exactly. It wasn't that he wasn't a great lawyer. He just wasn't, I call it the guppy effect. When people are doing things that they should be doing, they just kind of float around and it's easy. It's not a lot of struggle. And you just kind of, you can tell they're happy and it's just like a guppy, right? So he was not a guppy lawyer by any means. And so I, you know, told him, hey, you know, I'm going to have to let you go. And so, you know, in 30 days, you know, you're no longer going to be a lawyer here and I'll help you, you know, let's see if we can find you another job. And he's like, yeah, you know, I don't think I'm he got it. Now, this is the funny thing. The next day or a couple of days later, we were working on some efficiency software at the company to make the business more efficient. We had this goal of doing $1 million per employee in revenue and every little bit mattered. So we were working on this efficiency stuff and I went to somebody's desk and they're like, I'm like, hey, where did, what are you doing? And she's like, oh, well, I'm using this program. And I'm like, where'd the program come from? She goes, well, Mike made it for me. I'm like, Mike, lawyer?
The attorney?
Like Mike, the lawyer made it for you? And she's all, yeah. And I'm like, well, that's weird. So I go, hey, Mike, did you make this? He's all, yeah. I go, you program? He goes, yeah. I go, are you a good programmer? He goes, yeah, I can program anything. I'm a great programmer. I go, well, you do it on your spare time or whatever? And he goes, yeah. So I go, okay, I got a thing for you. So we, in our website, we needed some changes made. And I go, can you make these changes? And, you know, it's more complicated than just a website. It was we were hooking into a back-end ERP. He goes, sure, I can get that done. And I go, when can you get it done? He goes, I'll have it done by tomorrow. And I'm like, there's no effing way he's going to have this done by tomorrow. I come to work in the morning and he's there at like 5 a.m. and he goes, I'm done. And I'm like, what? And so he showed me what he did and sure enough, he was done. So we made him the CIO, the head of the software development. We had this crack team that was different than One Inc because it was specific things that we needed done for our insurance entity. He absolutely killed it. Ended up starting his own software company. Ended up selling it for multiple, you know, tens of millions and super happy and successful person. And, you know, it was because he...
He discovered his gift because you you helped him discover it.
Yeah. And so, you know, the people that have really great attitudes with a lot of, you know, good energy and want to be on the bus, it's your job as a CEO or a manager to find how they can be successful. And because if they have a great attitude and they want to be on the bus and they love working for the business, for sure there's a spot on the bus for it. It's your job to make sure that they're doing what they are good at. And once you get people doing what they're good, it's called the guppy effect. Once they're guppy and swimming around, it's unbelievable. You can tell they're not working. They're having fun. You can tell they come early. They stay late. Half the times, you know, when people are like that, you're like, hey, you got to go home. Oh, I just got to get this thing done. It's a beautiful thing. And so that was one example. But a lot of the people on our team obviously ended up doing pretty well. And some of them have gone out and started companies. It's cool.
That's great to see and great to hear about. Okay, anything else I need to, what did I not ask you about One Inc that's maybe people would think was really cool or, you know, very insightful?
Well, this is something that I can share because it's a difficulty with being an entrepreneur that's a change agent, right? So, and this is consistent with all of the companies, but One Inc was particularly good at this. So you start out with a business, you make a change. Your investors and oftentimes your employees, they don't get it. Like, what do you mean you're going to switch from software to payments? Like, we invested in a payments company, not a software, or a software company, not a payments company. Or once you're in payments, you know, we started working on outbound payments rather than just inbound payments. And in retrospect, all of these changes were the biggest, easiest changes in the history of the world. But it reminds me of, you know, Starbucks, when they, oddly enough, at Cherry's Berries, it was one of the potential investors was Howard Schultz from Starbucks. But anyways, they struggled for like 6 months internal fighting whether or not to have non-fat milk on the menu or not. Like, the biggest fight in Starbucks history was about non-fat milk. And you'd be scratch your head and go, that's just...
Why wouldn't you?
Yeah. So as we talk about these changes and stuff, the interesting thing is it may be really obvious for you, but it's really hard for people to change. And so we went to our first, you know, our first investor in the very beginning and said, we're going to do, we're doing software, we're going to do payments. They were so upset about us doing payments, they wanted out. So they sold out. Then with our next investor, we were doing payments and we said we want to do both inbound and outbound payments. And they were so upset about outbound payments, they wanted out. Then we went to the next, and it's just like along the way, you know, these really obvious, you look back and go, well, of course you're worth $2 billion. And these were the three things. Those three things were the things that caused the most strife in the company's history. Like, literally, I almost lost my job several times because of the changes that were the changes that made the difference. So it's interesting because you think it's really easy. You just make good decisions and everybody comes along. And so I would advise, I probably could do better at making sure people understand the change and then do the change. But that was a challenge. And it was very interesting because One Inc, we went through, I call them now an investing episodic pivots. So you have your company's doing this and then you pivot, and the best pivots are a whole entire line of business that is ancillary that allows you to grow. So Apple had computers, then they did the iPhone, right? And then all the stuff that's come from there. Amazon had, you know, their business, and they did AWS. And what's funny is I am sure that that board and everything said, what are we doing with AWS? Right. No, we're not, right? And so these great ideas and pivots that you do are very challenging. Although without that, how do you grow big businesses? You know, how does, you know, Apple wouldn't even be around if it right. wasn't for the iPhone, right? So you have to make those pivots and changes, but it is definitely stressful. So
yeah, and it takes courage, I'm sure. And any advice though to the, now I don't know how this worked. You mentioned that a few of these people that didn't want the change were investors, and obviously they have some amount of influence. Is there any advice to venture back startups that in taking on investors, how to make sure that they don't get themselves fired if they have to pivot hard? I mean, in creating the term sheet or anything like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, so investors are difficult. I mean, I know it's stated obviously, but or it's obvious that the investors, when they invest in your business, are difficult. They've invested a lot of money. There's two pieces to always keep in the back of your head. The first piece is investors invest in your business when greed overruns fear. Okay. And so what that means is you have a great idea, but then everybody has a fear of what if it doesn't work. So the idea or whatever you're building has to be so good that it overruns, it outweighs the risk, right? So people get greedy. You want people to be invest in your ideas or whatever. So one thing to keep in mind when you're doing these pivots or changes, you have to sell them on it the same way. Hey, we're going to be making this change, but the reason why we're making this change is this market's so much bigger and I need an investment in this line of business. But your current investors need to make that same decision mm-hmm. when the risk is way over, overrun by the opportunity. And so that's one. And then the other thing is, Bill Gates, people hate it when I use this analogy, but it's a really important one as a entrepreneur. So Bill Gates went and they created DOS, right? So when he went to the meeting, he didn't, with IBM, for those of you who don't know, he went and he did not know whether the DOS would compile and work because they had been working on it all night. No idea. Went in there, pushed the button. It worked. They said, we'll take it. All right. When can you deliver it? And he said, I can deliver it in 6 months or whatever time it was. And then after 6 months, they were nowhere close to being delivering it. So rather than go back and say, hey, we're late, sorry, we didn't get it. And then, IBM would likely fire him. He said, hey, we're late, but we're late because we've added these three features, which are so important to DOS that you don't even want it without these three. And they'd go, okay, yeah, you got another year. Then he'd miss that deadline and he'd say, yeah, but now I got these other ones. And so he was able to delay, the launch of DOS. Anybody else would have gotten fired, but he was able to delay it by saying, hey, look at, here's these new features and functions that are so valuable. It is worth waiting. So that the concept of those two together is, if you need to raise money, and you're having, if you're just raising money on the same business that you raised money for last time, and it's not doing well, nobody's going to invest in that business, right? If you said, I'm going to create, insurance payment software in this space doing this thing, and you get $10 million, and then you go back to market with, I'm doing insurance software doing this thing, and it's the same basic business, but for some reason it hasn't caught on, but if you give me $10 million more, it'll catch on. What will everybody say? Well, I don't know what the difference is between these two. The risk is so much. There's no greed, right? It didn't work before. Mm-hmm. Why is it going to work now? Whereas if you go, okay, we learned so much with this 10 million that we now know that we need to do these four things, and those four things will make this business a huge success. And oftentimes it's true, right? You really realize, hey, we can't really compete in the market until we have these things or whatever. And so then when the new investors are coming in, you're telling them, hey, we've had some success, but this is going to really take you to the next level. And people will invest in you and they'll invest in those ideas. You just can't come back with the same thing, right?
So tap into that sense of greed.
Yeah,
because they have some fear too.
And clearly, if you've gone 2 years and you went through $10 million, you had to learn really important things. And it's okay to say, I misunderstood the market. Right. That's another thing. I think people want to hear very honest, realistic explanations as to what the problem is. So you got to know what the problem is or was, and then you got to have a good solution for it. So, you raise money, and we had to raise money under dire circumstances. So you raise money and then you come back and you say, well, what happened? How come, you grew at 50%, but why are are you on plan? Almost nobody's ever on plan. I don't know a single company that you make your plan, especially as a small company. You make a plan, you say, I'm going to do $10 million in revenue next year, actually does $10 million in revenue. Like almost everybody does $5 million or $4 million or $3 million or whatever. But that could still be a huge success. It's now how are you going to go from that $3 million to $10 million and then $100 million? And being able to say, I misunderstood the market. I thought it was this, but it turned out to be that. And here's what I'm going to do to change it. And here's why I'm looking for the money. And having the, it's okay to admit you were wrong, I guess is what I'm saying. A lot of people try and fight around it and say, well, the market doesn't understand me, or the market's just slow to figure out why my thing is so brilliant. Well, the reality is more likely that you're not communicating well, or your thing isn't that brilliant, but that's why you got to pivot. So
I love it. Yeah. I love it. Very inspirational, educational, for sure. But you're coming in here, and we've been talking about a business that has had this wild success and so many lessons for startups. Now you're wearing a shirt that says Nottis on it, the original Italian burrito.
Yes.
And I know you've got your first location up in Tahoe going, and you're opening up the second location right down the street from me here in Rockland. Tell us about this new business that is a huge departure from One Inc, for sure.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. So, I always thought there should be a Italian fast food. So 20, 30 years ago, I was sitting in a restaurant and thinking about an Italian restaurant and thinking about there should be Italian fast food. So in my head, I said, okay, I'm going to make an Italian fast food restaurant someday. You know, Uberman from Stanford that's on YouTube.
Yeah.
He talks a lot about, when certain events happen. One of them is a really big successful event, selling a business, getting married or whatever, and he said, especially with selling a business, the problem is that people really celebrate and then it affects their emotional state. And then they have these big lulls and really bad lulls that can really affect people. And so I knew One Inc was going to be, a huge success. I wouldn't have to work anymore. But I heard that. And he said, the best way to solve that is just start something else. So I went to Katie, my significant other, and I said, hey, we're working on selling One Inc. I got to start doing something else because I'm going to be miserable if we sell this thing and I don't have something else. And she goes, well, what do you want to do? I go, well, I want to start an Italian fast food. So we started working on the idea. She goes, okay. And she's a hairstylist. So I made a menu and sent it to her work, and I said, see how your clients would like it. It was a bucket of spaghetti and lasagna and a pretty simple menu. It was called Nottis Italian. And it was testing great. Everything was going great. And I'm like, okay, this is going to be great. Someday we're going to open this up. And this was, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. And then started working on a little bit more. And then One Inc really started getting ready to do a transaction. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to start working on Nottis. So my brother comes over and he says, well, you can't eat Italian food in the car. Mm. And I'm like, that's why there's no Italian fast food. Well, how do we solve this problem? You talk about pivots, right? So one answer is you can't have fast food Italian. The next answer is, well, how do we make it portable? And so I was like, well, I like calzones, but I don't like the word calzone for some reason. I'm Northern Italian, but as a brand, it doesn't seem like a good brand. And then secondly, it's too heavy and too doughy and too, it's really greasy. And, so I was like, well, let's try and fix that. So we made it it ended up in the shape of a burrito. And I'm looking at it one day and I'm like, hey, it's an Italian burrito. And then we started air frying it because I love air fryers and not a lot of restaurants, no fast food uses commercial air fryers.
Yeah, that's really a healthier way to make the food.
So we started working on it and then I started testing it and... here we are.
You started making it in your house?
Yeah, started.
Your own air
well, fryer? Well, here's the funny thing. What I did to test it, this is probably a pretty good thing. And there's a book called Sprint by the guys at Google. And basically, they're how to test anything in a week. So I really believe that whatever idea you have, you can figure out a way to test it pretty quickly. So with Nottis, the idea was, well, we're going to make an Italian burrito with an air fryer. And... I don't know how to make pizza dough. So I was like, well, let's just go and get pizza dough from down the street and we'll just ask for a deconstructed pizza and we'll start making them. So that's how I started doing it. I started making them, handed out to friends and families. They loved it. This is why Steve Jobs says be foolish, because I thought, okay, it's going to be easy to make dough and all this stuff. So I started handing them out. We start giving them to friends and family. Everybody loves them. And, clearly I'm using other people's stuff, but the air fryer really makes it magical. So we then decide to go out to the airfield with my RV, and we make a sign and we stick it out. No permits or anything, of course, because I just want to see if anybody's going to buy an Italian burrito. And we sold out the first day. So we made double the next day, and we sold out the next day. And I'm like, okay, this is a thing.
Okay, so you got the dough, if you will, that is the, it's like a, that's like the tortilla.
Yeah, it's pizza dough.
It's pizza dough. And then you, what do you put in, what is the Italian food that goes into the burrito?
Well, so the original idea was to create a calzone that was shaped like a burrito. So anything you'd put in a calzone. So, you know, we have three different menu types. We have classics, which are pepperoni, sausage, cheese, or Hawaiian.
Okay.
Then we have specialties, which is like chicken parmigiana, or our number one seller is called the Firehouse, which is pepperoni, sausage, jalapeno peppers, habo, which is a hot sauce, and some peppers. And then we air fry it. And they're just phenomenal. But so the funny thing is, so we go to Cell One Inc. So I say to my wife, Katie, I'm like, I'm going to do this, and we're in Tahoe. She says, best advice anybody ever gave us, she says, if you're going to do this, you're going to do it a mile away from our house. Because if you do it anywhere else, there's no way we are going to be driving over the hill or half an hour. So we live in Zephyr Cove. And so we made the restaurant. This is funny. So we made the restaurant. We're ready to open, but I still have not figured out how to make dough. Now, dough is a thing. So this whole time I've been trying to make dough for like a year. Now we have a retail restaurant. We have everything done. We're ready to go, but I don't know how to make dough. So I'm trying to make dough. And we finally, it was sitting there for 3 months because I couldn't open it up because I didn't know how to make dough. We finally figured out the dough and the sauce. And dough's a thing. So we have a secret recipe for our dough. It's only 6 ingredients. So it's flour, yeast, water, salt, sugar, and olive oil, extra virgin olive oil. And that's it. It's never frozen. And we make it fresh in the store each day. And then we have our special sauce, which is like red sauce that we make every day. And then the ingredients that go in, it's basically like a Subway or a Chipotle, where we have all the ingredients. You can put whatever you want.
Oh, you get to walk down and pick it out. Okay.
Yeah. And then it takes 5 minutes to air fry it. Okay. So you can order a burrito and get in 5 minutes, or we have what's called hot and readies. So we make all the classics that are hot and ready to go. Okay. So you can just walk in and say, oh, yeah, no waiting. And it's a great concept. It's just been awesome. And people absolutely love it.
So you lived in Loomis 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And which is right, for anybody listening, that's like probably 5 minutes from here. And now you're living up in Tahoe. What prompted the move to Tahoe, and then why is your next location here? What's the plan?
Well, we've always wanted to live in Tahoe, and when my kids went to school, I was like, okay, well, let's move to Tahoe, and taxes are better, you know, which is a huge advantage. And so we, you know, obviously sold One Inc. and built the store up there. We also got just saw Matt. And so we got the store, we got a store inside the Tahoe Blue Event Center. So every event up there, we have a little kiosk there, and you can buy a Naughty's Italian burrito. And then we were like, okay, where are we going to go next? And it's the next store, we've been very successful and profitable with the first store, but the next two stores, if we want to franchise, which is probably going to be the idea, they've got to do really well. And so the logical place would have been to go to Carson City or Reno, but I don't know. I'm not from there, and I don't know where the good parts are, and I'm from Sacramento. And so I'm like, well, it's so important to get this right. Let's just do it where we know. So came down here, talked to AJ, who's our real estate broker, and found the spot next to Chipotle over in Target. And
yeah. So anybody who's thinking about this, so you guys are opening up this Saturday. I don't know when this is going to air, but what is it going to air? Oh, next Wednesday. Okay. So you can walk in there kind of during the grand opening period, and where it's located, I happen to know exactly where he's talking about, because it's like walking distance from our office. We're here on Granite Drive, which is kind of like Toy Row in Rockland. Along the freeway, you'll see Porsche and Tesla and all that stuff. So if you're going up toward Reno down I-80, it's that exit, right? Sierra College exit, and it's there, or you take the Rockland Road exit, and it's literally, if you stop by there, you stop by here too.
Because it's right next to Studio Movie Grill.
Yeah,
and Target, and there's a Chipotle in there, and we're a couple doors down from Chipotle. And this is what an Italian burrito looks like.
Oh, okay. And it looks good. And we just had Matt Levin on with Tahoe Blue. Yeah. Actually, he'll be coming on next week, I think. If this one's going on next week, when's Tahoe Blue guy coming on? Week after that. Okay, so after the show, I told him that we're recording both shows today. And he started to, I was like, well, what does it taste like? What's it like? Yeah. He had nothing but good things to say. That's, he's like, it's good. Fantastic. He goes into your location down there. So, because he lives in Tahoe too, Tahoe Blue guy. Yeah. So, okay, so it opens April 26th, a couple days from now. And so free burritos for a year for the first 250 people. So now the people hearing that, this is going to play next Wednesday, so this will be gone by then. Yeah. Okay. But my family can come in here, though.
Absolutely. Yeah. This Saturday, my guess is people will start lining up about 4 a.m. So it's the first 100 people will get a gift card for $520 of burrito. So one a week for a year. And the first 250 people get a free burrito that day.
Okay.
But the first 100 or the naughty 100, they get this gift card. And
the gift card, you get free burritos for a...
Well, you get $520 worth of burritos or for one a week for a year, but you can spend it
I'm going to drop off one of my grandkids down there to stand in line for me.
Yeah, yeah, you should.
I'll give them $200.
It's going to be awesome. Yeah, it's going to be a thing. And, you know, the brand, it's interesting. So the other piece we didn't talk about with One Ink, but it goes along with Sherry's Berries and One Ink and hopefully Naughty's. They're magical brands. What I mean by that is... the brand itself on its own carries more weight than it deserves. So Sherry's Berries is an example. We didn't do any marketing. I just called up companies and said, hey, we want to sell on your website. So the biggest one we did was 1-800-Flowers. So we were the only branded product that was not already a household brand. So we said, we're gonna put it on your site, but it's got to say Sherry's Berries. And that really, really lifted us on the national stage because we didn't pay anything for that. And millions of people saw Sherry's Berries. We ended up with like 200 or 300 partnerships that way. So we didn't spend a dime to build out the national brand. One Ink in the insurance space, just the same thing. People thought we were way bigger than we were, and which allowed back to that we were talking about this credibility. People really thought One Ink was bigger than it was the whole time. Because how did we get the domain oneink.com? How did we get the name? You know, those are for other days. But One Ink we're one vendor that solves all these problems. Naughty's is so far has really tested as the same sort of a magical brand. Everybody remembers it.
Well, everybody who's maybe listening on a podcast, it's not naughty like you've been a naughty boy. It's Notty. How'd the name originate?
So... I was thinking about what the name should be for our Italian food restaurant. And I had this idea of Naughty's Italian. And then Katie said, yeah, so no, it tastes so good. It's naughty. And I was like, yes, that's it. So that's where the kind of the start of it was. But, you know, I don't want to be that overt. N-A-U-G-H-T.
G-H-T-Y.
And so we started it out with a K-N, but then we had a trademark dispute. Mm. So we ended up winning the trademark dispute, but we had to get rid of the K. So we ended up with Notty's, which by the way,
I think it might be the best out of all three.
I think it is the best by far.
Yeah.
You know, so we ended up with Naughty's, which is the simplest.
It almost seems like
cleanest.
Somebody's name. Like, yeah. Who's Naughty? Are you the Naughty guy?
Yeah, yeah. Then, of course, everybody does that. Katie is the original Naughty girl. Okay. That's what her business card says, which is awesome. But, yeah, but everybody's like, you know, let's go get naughty. We're going to have like a bumper sticker in Tahoe.
Naughty night.
You know, keep Tahoe naughty instead of the keep Tahoe blue. There's a lot of play on words and stuff. So yeah, it's great.
That's fantastic. I love it. Okay, so I guess this will be the last question. What else do we need to know about Naughty's and maybe anything else this in parting words? I just want to give you the last word on building businesses and maybe on Naughty specifically too.
Well, I think just on building businesses, I think a lot of us have a vision for what we think can happen. And then a lot of people get stuck in the, it needs to be perfect or the environment needs to be perfect before I go and do it. Or, you know, what if there's a competitor out there I don't know about? And the answer honestly is if you really think you have a good idea or a vision for something, first of all, test it very quickly And if that testing goes well, just do it. There is no perfect time. There's no perfect recipe. There's no perfect anything. And here's the reason why it doesn't matter. Whatever that idea is, you won't do it anyways. It's actually going to end up being something else, right? This was going to be an Italian restaurant, and now it's an Italian burrito restaurant, right? One Inc. was going to be a software vendor and is now this. So it will be something different anyways. You just got to get out there and start building. And when you start building, you know, that the quicker you start building, the quicker you get something open and you start doing it, the quicker you'll find out what's wrong with it and then be able to pivot. And so whatever the idea is, it's not going to be perfect ever. And 9 times out of 10 or 100, you know, 99.9%, it's not going to be that idea anyways. So just start doing something and great things will happen. You know, I saw a last quote, which I'll end it. It said, the difference between your dreams and reality is action. So just, you know, if you want to do something, you just got to do it.
I love it. If you are not inspired and educated after today, then you aren't paying very close attention. Chris Ewing, congratulations on all your success. I'm really proud of you coming on the show, but really proud of you. And I love, it almost gives me chills to when I see greatness in front of me is like, wow, I get to be some small part of witnessing that greatness having unfolded.
You're way too kind. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, appreciate it. And to all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship and for the backyard advantage, and of course, all of you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. Here at Haney Biz, the Mark Haney Show, and the Growth Factory, we're never above you. We're never below you. Always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in the segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.